And we're back here on Alaska Homewise, brought to you by the Cold Climate Housing Research Center and the UAF Cooperative Extension Service. Our building and energy expert, Ilya Benesch, is here to take your questions. That is, if you're ready, Ilya.
Bring it on.
Okay. First question. I have an HRV in my crawl space, and it's starting to make funny noises. What should I do? Well, I assume that if you have any kind of device making funny noises, and it has to do with ventilation, it's probably worth having a look at.
Yeah, there's a number of things that can go wrong with an HRV that are really going to cut down on how well it ventilates. So, unfortunately, this sounds like the classic case of the neglected HRV. And HRV systems are, unfortunately, notoriously neglected. Usually they're stuck somewhere out of sight, out of mind, like a crawl space, and people just don't maintain them. And believe it or not, they do have a maintenance schedule, which really can affect performance if you don't pay attention to it. And there's a couple of things that I'm just going to throw out sort of prescriptively that might need to be done regularly. And the filters are a critical one. So examine the air filters for cleaning or replacement every 1 to 3 months. And I've seen houses where they haven't done it in years. And there's all kinds of stuff in the summertime that filters may load up with. It can be organic debris, anything from insects, pollen, dust, grass if it's down low, as far as the intake duct. And, you know, most of these types of filters are washable. The outside hoods and screens should be examined at this time, too. And it's just really quite surprising what gets sucked into there and really how long the HRV kind of just sits there when people don't pay attention to it, and that really affects performance. The other thing that needs regular maintenance is the exchanger core, and that should be cleaned roughly every 6 months. And you can refer to the owner's manual for specifics, and we'll get into that a little bit more later. But generally, I'll say the core can be vacuumed and or washed out with soap and water. You want to inspect, and if needed, clean the condensate drain and pan every 6 months. The lines can be tested just by slowly pouring clean water into the drain and just to check for obstructions. The HRV drain lines should have a trap or a loop containing water, which will prevent the unit from drawing in air through the line. This also can matter because if the HRV is tied into a septic system for drainage, and especially if the HRV is in the crawl space and it's tied into your plumbing, and it's the lowest point in the plumbing, it's also the first place the plumbing is going to back up. And it's not going to be noticed, at least not for a while, and it can get pretty ugly. So you want to make sure all the right check valves and traps and things are in place if that's the case. The other thing is the fans. Many fans are designed to function without lubrication, but some will require it, especially on the older models. In those cases, you're looking at 3 to 6 months as a good baseline. The other thing I want to point out, too, is the HRV should be balanced. It should be balanced within 10% of neutral. This means the HRV is taking in roughly as much air as it is exhausting and not creating pressure problems in the house. If you don't know if this has been done or it's been years, it might be worthwhile to have a professional inspection done and have somebody come out and balance it. And, you know, speaking of inspections, you know, believe it or not, things can go wrong in an HRV. They're generally pretty tough. They're made to last for a long time, but they will need to be inspected. The other place you can go is the owner's manual. If you don't have it, which I can certainly see most people not having it, you can usually Google the brand and pick it up off the internet. These manuals go back years. The main brands we have in Fairbanks is usually about 1 of 4 or 5. They're all available online for download.
Here's a pretty standard question. How often should I clean out my wood stove?
Oh, boy. I always dread this kind of question because of all the variables, and I'm pretty conservative just because it's a combustion appliance and you think of all the bad things that can happen. So the bottom line here is basically some sound advice. Burn hot fires with dry wood and you'll have less problems. If you damp down your stove for the day when you go to work, or if you're burning wood that hasn't been dried properly, you can build up creosote pretty quickly inside that chimney. I actually had a friend that managed to rot out just his liner pipe within a year just by burning wet wood and damping it down every day, loading it up, leaving for 8 to 10 hours, and just having this thing kind of smoke along. So it's that creosote, it can be aggressively corrosive, more so on just the thin liner pipes than, say, the insulated double wall stove pipes. But in general, I'd say avoid that. Another thing to watch out for is if you have a chimney that runs up outside your house rather than inside, it's going to run a lot cooler, and that's going to increase the chances of having condensation and creosote buildup in the pipe. Chimney pipes ideally should be perfectly straight and run straight up out of the stove and out the roof inside the heated space. If the chimney goes directly out of the back of the stove, through the wall, and then up outside, that's definitely worth keeping tabs on. Personally, I'd look down the pipe with a flashlight every month or two if I had any reason at all to be concerned. If you can't get on your roof or you have, you know, some suspicions, such as the pipe looks damaged or rusted or it's got, you know, big old dents in it, I'd say call a chimney sweep to make a site visit and an inspection. Those guys, they know what they're looking for, and they can give you a pretty good idea of your chimney's performance. I'd like to say one more thing on creosote, and it is corrosive, but if left unchecked, it'll really build up, and if you get a chimney fired, those temperatures can reach 2,000 degrees inside that chimney pipe. You can imagine what the potential issues are here, especially if that chimney doesn't have the proper clearances, and that's where the chimney sweep will definitely give you some ideas as far as where you are in relation to codes. If you suspect you've had a chimney fire, by all means get it inspected. Don't keep burning that stove. Yeah, the pipe may look fine, but you really want to have somebody check that out.
Next question is a light question. I've read LED lights perform well in cold temperatures. How about in Alaska?
Absolutely. We've seen that LED lights do really well in cold temperatures. In fact, the colder it gets, the better they perform. LEDs are generally pretty tough. They're shock and cold resistant. When it comes to outdoor lighting at extreme temperatures, then some fluorescents can suffer from performance losses when compared to the use inside. It might take them longer before they get up to brightness, or they don't achieve a full level of brightness. But not all are that way, so I'm not going to categorically rule out fluorescence. And the industry is working on improvements all the time in this regard. Currently, LED lights are really popular in low-light applications such as pathway lighting or for task lighting, such as workbenches, night lights, or flashlights. And what they're really replacing is the small incandescent bulbs. And the issue at hand here is that the smaller incandescent bulbs are the least efficient, so those are the perfect thing to be replaced with an LED light. When it comes to the lighting industry in general, changes are moving along really quickly, and so you're seeing prices come down both with LEDs and fluorescents, and as well as their ability to work in different environments. If you're looking at buying an LED light for outdoor use, get one with a good warranty. The bulbs may last a long time, but there are other components to the light that you want to have covered, and it may not fare as well, so you want a nice warranty there too.
Recently, I was scoffed at for wanting to insulate my septic tank when I install it next summer. How much insulation is necessary for a septic tank?
Well, this is something of a debatable question. However, keep in mind that there are bacteria in the tank, and they'll do better if it's warmer in there in the winter than if it's cooler. I yet have to find a study that really gives a good assessment of how much of a difference insulation makes in relation to soil's temperature and bacteria performance. But more of a concern for me is the tank may freeze if it isn't located deep enough or if it doesn't have enough insulation over the top to protect it from atmospheric cold. And this holds especially true on those winters where it gets really cold before we have a lot of snow. In those cases, the ground will freeze really hard and it can freeze really deep. And I was kind of wondering if that wasn't going to happen this year. But if it gets much colder for longer, I'd like to see a little more snow on the ground. When you're looking at a septic tank, I would look at this as my primary concern. You know, when in doubt, it can be cheap insurance to add a 2-inch layer of rigid foam insulation right over the top of the tank, run it past the sides a few feet, and that'll help protect the tank quite a bit from freezing. Let's say you have a winter with marginal conditions. The alternative is have the top of the half of the tank sprayed with several inches of polyurethane foam. Typically, what we've done is septic tanks are a great way to use up all the scrappy pieces and damaged pieces of foam, and you can still bury them, put them together, and they'll help insulate. But bottom line for me here is I would defer to the DEC as far as what the most current code information is for insulating a tank.
Thank you very much, Ilya. That's all for this week's edition of Alaska HomeWise. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Don't forget, you can email us questions at akhomewise@cchrc.org, and we will see you next week.
If you want to submit a question to Alaska HomeWise, email us at akhomewise@cchrc.org. We'll try and get your question answered on the air. For more information on HomeWise, including a schedule of upcoming shows, visit the UAF Cooperative Extension Service website at www.uaf.edu/ces or the Cold Climate Housing Research Center at cchrc.org. Save energy. Save money. Become HomeWise.